This is the Bird Hugger Podcast with Katherine Greenleaf, the podcast for people who love birds.
Welcome to the Bird Hugger Podcast. I'm Katherine Greenleaf, and I'm so glad to be with you. I'm on board for a full 30 minutes of talking all things birds and restoring native habitat.
What happens when a burnt-out college professor living in New England decides to become a wildlife rescuer and rehabilitator? Find out on Bird Hugger, the podcast for people who love birds. Join host Katherine Greenleaf, who has been rehabilitating injured wildlife for 20 years, and hear how you can turn your backyard into a native oasis for birds.
Hello there, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Bird Hugger Podcast. Since I'm in Florida right now, I thought it only fitting to focus on one of the Sunshine State's most iconic bird species, the swallow-tailed kite. There's no mistaking the beautiful sight of this largest of the American kites. It is simply breathtaking. Today we have as our guest Gina Kent, senior scientist from the Avian Research and Conservation Institute, headquartered in Gainesville, Florida. Gina has dedicated her life's work to tracking and trying to help the swallow-tailed kite. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. If you are enjoying this show and like what we do, please help us out by subscribing or following us on your favorite app to access our free show. That way you'll get notified of what's coming, you'll never miss a show, and it will help us in the ratings. Gina, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on the show. We're very excited to be talking about swallow-tailed kites. Maybe before we get into that discussion, just tell us a little bit about yourself and the work that you do.
Sure. I'm originally from Wisconsin and made my way to Florida for a position with the organization I work for now, which is ARCI, Avian Research and Conservation Institute. We're based here in Gainesville, Florida. I did my undergrad at the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point, and took a lot of field jobs around the country and one in Australia, just kind of experimenting with what I wanted to do with my biological and wildlife career. And I had a two-month position here in Florida with ARCI looking at short-tailed hawk nesting in the panhandle of Florida. And after that, I was hooked, and there was a lot of projects coming up with ARCI, as well as the opportunity to do a master's with some of the swallow-tailed kite data we were collecting. So I did a master's then on swallow-tailed kites, and specifically their stopover biology and their use of the Yucatan Peninsula and Cuba on their southbound migration. I also looked at parasites of the swallow-tailed kites that we captured, and as well as habitat associations using the remotely tracked data from the swallow-tailed kites. I've been with ARCI here since 2000. It's been a long time, a little on and off with the graduate work, but solidly since 2004, living in Gainesville, Florida, and working on all of the bird projects that ARCI is involved in right now.
Is it a nonprofit?
Yes, it is a nonprofit. It was started by my boss, the executive director, Ken Meyer, back in the late 80s. And we do work on imperiled species, a lot of which are endangered, all birds, all bird research, and their food and habitats as well. So we have a niche in capture and tagging and tracking technologies. So we find safe and effective ways to capture rare birds and place transmitters on them and then collect the data ultimately for management decisions to protect locations where these birds are nesting or roosting or migration route detections and things like that. So very rewarding work.
It sure sounds like it. Swallow-tailed kites, where do they fall in line with other raptors? I mean, how would you describe one to our listeners?
Well, they are the most beautiful raptor. We'll start there. They are in their own genus, the Elenoides forficatus. So they are a lightly built raptor. So they've got very small beak and feet rather than like a large hawk or eagle or even falcon. So they are lightly built to fly effortlessly, catching small prey, which a lot of the adult diet is insects. So they get up in the morning and spend almost all of their day on the wing. They are efficient flyers. They've got long, pointy wings, long, beautiful forked tail that helps them rudder and maneuver to catch fast-flying insects out of the sky. They also glean food from the tops of trees and bushes as they fly around. So their eyesight is fabulous, and their flying technique to catch things fast is very superior.
It really reminds me of pelagic birds like the albatross or magnificent frigatebird, who spend their entire lives on the open ocean and only come down to the water to grab fish and go right back up into the air.
Yeah, it's true.
Again.
So they'll obviously sleep at night on tall trees, often near water or snags in communal locations. So they're, for a raptor, the other thing that kind of separates them from other raptors is they are very social. They nest in loose colonies, which we call neighborhoods, and non-incubating or brooding birds at night will join communally in roost sites together. And then when they're starting to gather before they migrate to South America, they find these communal roost sites together. And they can be upwards of 3,000 birds at a time in these communal roosts that are so important for them to prepare for their southbound migration, to get nice and fat with insects and prey and put on a lot of fat before they make a big overwater crossing to the Yucatan Peninsula and other parts of Mexico.
And they are beautiful. Could you describe their coloring?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, you know, people say they're black and white, but really, if you see the back of them, they've got a beautiful, like, blue-gray sheen. And then on the upper part of the forward part of the wing, there's these purplish-greenish iridescent coverts. But from the underside, those dark primaries and secondaries look black. And then the underwing lining and the whole belly and chest and under tail coverts are all white, and the head. So it is a very striking black and white bird. But if you look at them even closer, they're almost blue and purple, and they've got kind of a sheen to them. And just the grace about them, you know, they have these long pointed wings, this long forked tail. They're unmistakable when you see them in the sky.
Yeah. You know, when we drive through the Everglades at this time of the year, and we're going down the Tamiami Trail, we're Route 41, as soon as you come into the eastern side of Naples, you can see them hanging out in all the really big agricultural fields. It's sort of the last remnants of undeveloped Naples on that side, you know, near Big Cyprus.
Nice.
I've seen them roosting in the trees.
Yeah. So Big Cypress is like classic swallowtail kite habitat, where there's these open areas for them to feed, and then these cypress domes and scattered pine tree open lands where they can find tall trees to nest in. Their favorite tree is, in Florida at least, is a pine tree. We find a lot of swallowtail kites nesting at the tops and the centers of pine trees, but also cypress trees, and often in the middle of these tall, round cypress domes. But the Big Cypress has this beautiful heterogeneity of habitats and structure of plants that makes foraging for swallowtail kites perfect, because there are a lot of insects and small reptiles and amphibians that crawl up into the treetops where they're accessible to the swallowtail kite, which during the nesting season, they are going to be feeding their chicks items like rough green snakes, green anoles, even roosting bats they might find in trees, sometimes wasp nests filled with grubs that they'll bring to the nest for the chicks to pull out, and little nestling birds. So bigger packages instead of tiny little insects, which they'd have to make so many trips to feed a nestling.
So stinging insects do not bother them.
That's true. Yeah. You know, they have a lot of feathers around their face and their neck and all the way down their legs. So it probably prevents any stinging insects that they would be capturing to get to their skin and sting them. Also, there's been a study where they looked at the inner lining of the stomach and esophagus of swallowtail kites, and they're very bumpy. So if they did swallow something with like a stinger, that maybe they're protected even more internally.
Well, that's fascinating. So tell me, how high up in a tree do they nest?
Gosh, depending on the forest. So they'll be at the apex of the largest center of branches, or that tippy top crotch of sturdy enough branches. And they often find one of the tallest trees in the stand. And so within Florida, they're probably 70 to 90 feet up in pine and cypress trees, but they can be even lower if there's a smaller stand of trees. And I say that they nest in pine and cypress, but we've seen them in oaks and sweet gum and swamp maple and loblolly bay and other trees. So they can surprise you where they put their nest in what kind of tree. But what's consistent in the Southeast is that they use Spanish moss within their nest. So you may see a nest in a tree that's way up in the top, looks good for what a swallowtail kite might want as far as nest sighting. But if it does not have Spanish moss in it, it's not going to be a swallowtail kite tree or nest.
Wow. That's amazing.
What can be a problem for being that high in a pine tree or any tree for their nesting is wind in general and storms. So they're definitely exposed. As graceful and fabulous of flyers they are, they need a big open canopy for them to get in and out of the nest. So that makes the nest cup, the nest itself, exposed, which then if there's wind in a bad storm, it could throw the eggs, it could throw chicks, or even the whole nest in poor weather conditions.
Tell us about how they raise their chicks. How many eggs do they usually lay, and how long is it before they fledge?
Sure. They lay one or two eggs typically, but very few times we have seen three chicks in a nest. And they're beautiful eggs. The few that I've seen the shells of after they hatch, and you can find those eggshells at the base of the tree sometimes. But they're very round and kind of an off-white, but they've got these chocolatey pattern on the egg itself. And the incubation lasts probably about 30 days. And then the chicks are within the nest for 35 to 40 days, depending on how anxious they are or how persistent the parents are at getting them out of the nest. But they'll look like an adult with black wings and a full white head at probably about 25 days old.
Is it South America that they migrate to?
At the end of the summer, actually, they start migrating to South America. So they are early migrants as far as other species of raptor. They finish their nest cycle, and then the job is to just start eating and getting fat for migration. They often explore once the nesting is done and the chicks are on the wing. The parents will encourage the chicks to fly off to other areas to find good food sources. And often this is north. So birds from South Florida, we find heading all the way to the Savannah River for a month or so before they turn south and migrate for the winter. But the bulk of swallowtail kites leaving the U.S. is late July and August.
Wow. Now, how far north is Savannah River, the farthest north they've been documented so far? Or?
Nope, they've been documented. I mean, as you know, there's vagrants that are even up in Canada. But as far as nesting birds, there's some now into North Carolina. So just going over the border of South Carolina in that nice area with many rivers, there's some newer nest observations there. So that's great. But the bulk of swallowtail kites, we say it's like South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Texas. So those states. But before the 1940s, they were nesting all the way up the Mississippi Valley into Wisconsin and Minnesota even. So their range has constricted since the 1940s. There was a lot of logging and even some perhaps persecution, people shooting them. And because their eggs were so gorgeous and there was like egg collectors back in the day, their eggs were highly prized for egg collections. So swallowtail kites are not endangered, but their numbers have decreased since the 1940s quite a bit with all this deforestation, but they have definitely increased and we see a steady incline of their population.
Oh, so you're seeing their numbers going up slightly.
We are, definitely. Oh. Yes, they are not colonizing back up the Mississippi River, but there's been some stray nests in Arkansas a few years back. I'm not sure the current situation there. And then now into North Carolina. The thing about swallowtail kites is I mentioned they are very social. And this includes finding areas where other birds are nesting. So if there's a little group of nesting birds now in North Carolina, perhaps some of those birds will start expanding and moving north from there. So we might see a general expansion from where they already are, but to have new birds show up, say, in Wisconsin or Illinois, that would be a big stretch, but perhaps that's in the future. So that would be really, really cool to see.
And how far south, when they fly back to South America, where do they like to congregate?
Yeah, we've been tracking swallowtail kites with remote trackers, GPS, satellite, and GSM transmitters, which collect their data through the cell phone network. And so we've learned where they spend their winter, which most of our tracked birds have been in southern Brazil. The areas of Rondônia, Mato Grosso, and Mato Grosso do Sul are the most common areas of the North American subspecies spending their time, but also parts of Bolivia and Paraguay and even Argentina, northern Argentina.
Hmm. Now tell our listeners about your research. What is it you're trying to find out about the swallowtail kite?
Yeah, so we've been tracking swallowtail kites since the late 90s. And the technology has changed so much since then. So it's very cool to see how we're able to use these new technologies of using satellite and GSM technology to learn more about not only the migration route of swallowtail kites, but stopover sites and then wintering areas and how those are changing over time. So we have data since the late 90s. And something we're really excited to look into is how birds have shifted in their winter range over time. So once swallowtail kites get to their wintering areas, they're also communal, colonial. They find these big roost sites together. They feed in large groups of over 1,000. And with our tracking data, we see that birds from all over the United States are coming together literally in the same trees, in the same forest, in the same pasture lands in South America. So we have our eggs in one basket. You know, we want to make sure that the places where they're going in South America are safe. And a lot of those places are being converted to large-scale agriculture. So soybeans and sugarcane are big, taking over a lot of these family cattle farms, cattle ranches that are on this Cerrado habitat where the kites really thrive during our winter time. And so we want to see with our tracking data how the birds have moved over time and track the landscape changes. And there's a lot of deforestation of the Amazon, making more pasture lands or more agriculture. And so we see the birds using those areas a little bit differently now too. And we have the data to do it. And this is a big project we're looking forward to seeing over time.
So can you tell your, what could your average person do to help the swallow-tailed kites?
Yeah, well, this is great here, just having awareness of what they're doing throughout the year. They're only in the United States 38% of their time. So, and that's here to breed. We have, I feel, the need or the ability to take care of them while they're here and breeding, protecting nest sites and encouraging more land protection so they always have a place to come back to breed. For our own research in the U.S., we're very interested in where nests are. So we have a sightings report form on our website and also a nest monitoring program we call Eyes on Kites. ARCI, this organization I'm with, is very small, and we would love to have help of citizen scientists out there keeping track of nests wherever they're finding kites throughout the Southeast. And it's an easy little form to get started on, and just keeping track of nest fate and location. It's kind of our main things, like how many, you wouldn't figure out how many eggs because you can't see into a nest, but how many chicks do they fledge? Is the land protected or is it on private land? And just some simple little habitat associations with the specific nest, like what kind of tree and how high and things like that.
I was going to say, since they're big insect eaters, to avoid using insecticides wherever possible.
Of course. Yes. Yes. Those studies showing the decimation of insects all over is quite alarming. And not only do the kites need insects, but their primary prey source for their chicks, all the frogs and anoles and birds that they feed on, also feed on these insects. So that's very important too.
Yeah, I was also going to add that if birds like swallow-tailed kites and other birds were allowed to do their job, which amazingly is to eat millions of insects, there wouldn't be any need for insecticides. It's sort of like using a bazooka to take out a blade of grass or something. It's just so much overkill out there. So as we wrap up here, is there a website people can go to if they want to make a donation toward your work?
Yes, thank you. ARCINST.org. So it's like arcinst.org.
Great.
And there's a big donation button right on the right. And then get involved. You'll find our sighting reports form, which goes through not only swallowtail kites, but we're also doing research on short-tailed hawks, crested caracara, snail kites, great white heron, reddish egrets. So we're interested in sightings of all those species as well.
That is great. Well, Gina, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been wonderful to have you on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. This was great. Thank you.
I'd like to thank Gina Kent for joining us today. You can find out more about Gina's work at the Avian Research and Conservation Institute by going to their website at arcinst.org.
Join Americans everywhere in the One Third for the Birds movement. dedicate the back third of your yard to birds and other wildlife. Make this area a quiet zone with no leaf blowers or lawnmowers. Plant native trees and shrubs so birds have plenty of insects to eat. Create a safe haven for birds to nest and raise their young. You will be rewarded with many hours of bird watching fun. For more information on One Third for the Birds, go to the Bird Hugger page on Facebook.
And that's it for today's episode, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Have a great week and enjoy the birds. Bye for now.